From a scale of 1 to 10, what's your excitement level for this thing?
Or for having to spend 7 hours on a plane? Or,
yes.
Or for having to spend like 2 hours waiting in line to get into a...
it sounds like a 10 out of 10.
To Paramount. So, I'm very excited. I'm very excited because, not because, you know, I have like a strong conviction on how things play out and I'm going there, you know, knowing what kind of data points or catalyst or, you know, additional insight I'll have supporting my thesis, but more because I've probably never faced in my career as an investment analyst, a situation in which you have like a lot of uncertainty, of course. But that uncertainty is like, I would say, you know, early stage startup. And we're talking like a $700 billion market cap.
Yeah.
And that's like a fairly late stage kind of technology development where you have a fantastic prototype. You have a team that has really demonstrated that they can put a prototype on the road. And actually they have like a few millions prototypes on the road, and the technology is still completely, miles, if not light years away from being capable of delivering the service it's aimed for. But it's making progress. And to add to that, the technology is making progress in a field that now is very heavily, marked by generative AI. And if there is one thing Sam Altman said that I really appreciate a lot and like a lot, is this notion of veil of ignorance, that like the whole generative AI field is actually moving towards with no idea, what happens next? What happens when you multiply by 10 or 100 the amount of data on which you train a model, or like multiply by 10 or 100 the amount of compute you put into training, etc. And so that's insane. And it's fascinating. Like for me as an analyst, it's like probably the most exciting times I've ever faced. And I have to say, I don't know what's going to happen. Doing research on that is really super exciting.
For sure. Yeah. I know for those that are joining us now, if you follow the Tesla story close, you know, Pierre from probably mostly from these great questions on Tesla earnings calls and also his research with New Street Research. How long have you been following Tesla for now, Pierre?
Since I founded New Streets, technology research. So that was like, April 2000. So okay. We're heading towards, going into 6 years, very, 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 7 years, very, very, very exciting.
Yeah. And, I know one of the things, he's here. One of the things that's, very exciting about this event from my standpoint, and I agree with everything you just, it's just how divergent the self-driving solutions seem to be in this day and age, where you have approach by the legacy, let's say the legacy self-driving outfits, as I like to call them, that have been trying to solve for this technology using traditional, equipment like LiDAR, sonar, ultrasonics, HD maps, which of course gives them the ability to have a solution today. You know, players like Waymo do have self-driving outfits, and they are collecting revenue doing self-driving rides, which is very, very awesome. And they're sort of paving a way for the technology, especially in places like the United States. Whereas, like you described, Tesla's coming in and is taking this brand new novel approach on a novel problem, right? Self-driving is something that we've been trying to solve for a long time as a society, and looks like it's finally gaining steam as of the last few years. But Tesla and other players, especially in China, are not saying, okay, we're going to try to come in and solve this using a brand new approach that we don't even know where it's going to end, right? And I think what's most interesting about that is that approach seems to be the most, if it works, it gives you the ability to dramatically reduce the parts that you would use to outfit a vehicle or a self-driving solution to go from point A to point B, because you're relying on an artificial intelligence to learn how to drive instead of essentially brute forcing a bunch of sensors into, let's say, a vehicle from a different manufacturer, let's say from the outfit that's solving self-driving to solve, right? So it's like, it's very divergent. Is that how you see it as well, in the coming years?
So I think the landscape is probably slightly less divergent than you describe it. And most importantly, it has like way more convergence, than you might think. So let's start with just restricting the landscape to Mobileye and Tesla, just for the sake of simplicity. So if you look at the two businesses, the two like teams, they have a lot in common. So they both use generative AI, for perception, for path planning. One is using it at a very, very large scale and pushing, I would say, the boundaries of what can be covered with generative AI. And the other one is using it in a more targeted way, but they both use it. They are both, I would say, vision first. So they both acknowledge that driving is first like a vision-based activity, and any self-driving system must be vision first. And they are both going down a path of getting the technology in the cars and take it from let's help drivers drive and let's help them more up to the point where we can actually drive for the driver, as long as the driver is keeping a very close eye and supervising the technology, with eventually having the driver actually being able to check out in terms of attention. And then the holy grail is actually you don't even have a driver in the car anymore. So you see that it's a lot of commonality. Then when you look at the difference, but you have one fundamental, I would say, difference between the two, which is that both are data driven. So they gather a lot of data, to have like systems that self-improve and self-learn. But the way Tesla is gathering the data and concentrating it with like a high loss ratio into something that can drive is almost exclusively and probably exclusively through a neural network. So yeah, you take the data of like billions of miles of driving and you compress that data into a neural network, into a few billions of weights. So, and then that creates a driver that is supposed to know about how to drive in a fairly universal way anywhere in the world and in any circumstances. And then Mobileye is actually gathering a lot of data as well, and is also compressing it with a very high loss. But instead of compressing it into a driver, it's compressing the data into, you know, the best way to qualify what they do is probably like a high definition map. But the reality is that Mobileye is keeping for every place in the world, you know, all the information you need to drive well in that place. So there is at the same time here a similarity, which is you access a lot of data and you compress it with a high loss ratio. But one is compressing it, I would say, vertically into a driver, and the other one is compressing it like horizontally into an HD map. So today, I would say that's the only significant difference between the two systems. Everything else is actually fairly common. And then there is a difference of vision. And the difference of vision is very, very tiny, because Elon says it's going to be vision only and it's going to work, end of the story. And if you disagree with that, you can't be part of this team. Whereas Mobileye says, well, you know, we know how to get to like maybe 1,000 hours of MTBF, you know, mean time between failures, with vision only. But we think that we don't know how to get from 1,000 to 1,000,000, which is basically what you need to be really like, to have a fully autonomous, like unsupervised autonomous driving. And so what Mobileye thinks is by the time they get to 1,000 hours of MTBF with their vision only system, the technology will be right to add, you know, like a couple of $1,000s of additional sensors that will provide like a parallel perception system. And that will achieve also 1,000 Mbps. But as the two systems will be fully independent, when you combine them together, they get like 1,000 times 1,000, which is 1,000,000 Mbps. Whereas Elon says, no, no, getting from 1,000 to 1,000,000 is going to be the same effort as going from 1 to 1,000, which implicitly Elon says it's going to be a log law, like a logarithmic law. So it's, yes, the matter is how much you multiply. But Mobileye says, well, it might take you actually way, way more. And so it might be more efficient to add additional sensors than to keep working on the, on the, on the, on the learning system, on the machine learning to improve the system. And what's interesting is that I had a chat there with Amnon Shashua, the CEO of Mobileye, a couple of weeks ago, a very interesting conversation. And I asked him, but what if you see that actually the thing scales well and that the effort to go from 1,000 to 1,000,000 is the same as going from 1 to 1,000? Then Amnon said, oh, in that case, we'll drop the LiDARs because we won't need them. But I don't believe in that. So I'm actually having my teams working on adding LiDARs in order to get to that level. But you see that, and then if you look at it from the perspective of Elon, he would never tell you today, no, no, worst case, I will add LiDARs. But if at some point you see that the LiDAR technology comes in and is a better way to get where he wants to go, we know he's very pragmatic and he's going to use it. You know, he was defending like carbon for rockets and then he moved to stainless steel. And there are a lot of things, you know, that where he changed his mind when like the fact-based, the first principle approach was clearly stating that the alternative route was better. So it might be that in 5 years from now, Mobileye and Tesla would actually still be very close to each other. Now there is a point you made that is very important, which is the approach on which Tesla is kind of like all in. So they don't say vision first, they say vision only. And they don't say machine learning first, they say machine learning only. These are the technologies that scale the most. So that's where that makes the game so exciting, because if Tesla wins, they are going to win big time. Because like, if it's a machine learning game, if it's a vision only game, like, yes, others will have access to Mobileye, and actually Mobileye will be very well off, you know, providing probably to other car manufacturers the most efficient alternative to Tesla.
Yeah.
But like other players who just develop things at the scale of a single auto manufacturer who are just getting started, etc., how can they compete with Tesla, knowing that Tesla already today has access to 100,000 H100 chips to train their models.
Those are all excellent points. Hans jumped off again. I think he's having a lot of technical difficulties. Hopefully we can get that figured out.
Okay.
So one of the interesting points you made there is about Tesla scale. So how do you view this scale? So if they win, if they actually are able to solve this, let's say they have the machine learning things figured out and they have the vision only things figured out, how do you view the time scale of this potentially? You know, because I'm assuming you're sort of taking a statistical approach and you're saying, here are the likelihoods of these things happening, right? So in the case where, let's say Tesla does win and their effort is really the truly scalable one, and is the one that actually ends up not only offering the best service or the best solution, but they also have the ability to just make millions of these units per year. How do you view the time scale of this ramp? And how do you view the likelihood of that scenario actually arrive? I think Tesla folks would be very interested in hearing that portion of it. And by the way, before you answer too, I have linked at the top of the space, the latest research on robotaxi, the robotaxi opportunity and how to frame it properly from Pierre. He made this available for folks to read into very, very kindly. So I'll let you take it, Pierre.
Thanks. So, I think that one area where the way, I frame the question is very different from what you'll see, in other research, other work and other perspectives is that to me, robotaxi is not like a single kind of, capability. So, I like to take like a step-by-step approach. So there is a capability, which is a system that can drive a car by itself as long as it is closely supervised. And this is what you have today. If you have like a modern, excluding the Cybertruck, where it's still where it's work in progress, but they're going to get there soon. Like, if you have any other Tesla, basically that's the capability of the car. The car drives for you, and you just have to be around, and you have to take over once in a while. So that's supervised self-driving. Then you need to be able to get to unsupervised. So unsupervised means just the driving features, the driving action is taken care of by the car, and you don't have to worry about it. And that's the next frontier. Okay. And basically the catalyst for that is really the meantime between failure. And you need to get at least in the few hundreds of thousands of MTBF and probably to a million to ensure like a very, very broad adoption of the technology. But here you still need someone in the car just to deal with what I call mission delivery, which is not like the driving by itself, but it's more like parking the car at the right place, like starting the mission fine, finishing the mission fine. And also, very importantly, this is what's going to help you deal with the unforeseen events. Okay. You're on the road, there is something happening, etc. There is a traffic jam being created. You need to be a bit creative. You'll have like to go borderline in terms of driving restrictions, etc., to figure out a solution to the problem. And so that I call that robotaxi take-up. So once you have a car that can drive by itself with like a millionaire MTBF, you still need to figure out how that car figures out how to pick up someone, how to drop off someone, how to deal with a special situation, etc. So that's what I would call the second barrier. So the third barrier. The first barrier, can you drive supervised? The second one is, can you drive unsupervised? The third one is, are you robotaxi capable? Can you pick up and drop off people in any circumstance? And then you have a third characteristic, a third, level of development that to me is critical, which is your technology scale out? And this is something that in Elon's view, from like the conversation I've had with him on the topic, to him, it's a no-brainer. He always says, oh, you have the fleet, you just have to turn it on. And my challenge to that is, wait, because that means your car is capable of behaving as a robotaxi in a completely unknown environment. Okay. And that's a feature, a characteristic that is absolutely critical in order to deliver on the plan of like building like a couple of millions of robotaxis every year and basically replacing almost all means of transportation by robotaxis. Because for now, what we see is that when you try and scale out, like you take the Waymo cars, they are at the unsupervised stage and they are at the robotaxi capable stage because they deliver a few thousands or maybe tens of thousands of rides every week now, but they don't scale out. It's very, very, very difficult, very challenging and very complex to develop a new fleet. And once you have a fleet, you still have a major, I would say, commercial issue, which is you have to take market share from, the Uber fleet. And of course, the Uber fleet benefits from having like their, their human drivers who are very good at figuring out problems and like the mission delivery aspect of the job. Actually, something that we humans are very good. And so, yeah, of course, if you have a robotaxi that really has the capabilities of taxi driver in terms of driving, which is probably the easiest part, and then in terms of delivering the service, which is the most difficult, so then you can scale out the fleet. Okay, so you have like these four successive stages of development, and the value of the price for Tesla is going to depend on how fast it can go on that scale. So your question was about timing. I think like the unsupervised status feels like relatively close. I would say today is really, really awesome, and it's almost frustrating sometimes. Like last night, I was driving under FSD. I had to take control over it because I wanted to send a text and the system wouldn't let me send a text. And so So it's really, really, really good. And so, and so you can feel that, you could be close to unsupervised. I couldn't make a call on timing. I think it's very difficult. But what I'd like to say is, if you ask me, like, what's my gut feel, about like the probability that we get there in a reasonable amount of time. So within a couple of years, I would say it's a high probability, like maybe 75% or something like that.
Yeah.
And then after that, can you be robot taxi capable with vision only, with like the, you know, very, the amount of compute you have on a Tesla, in hardware V4, et cetera, et cetera. I would say it's more difficult to know, but maybe you have like a 50% chance. And then I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's the right way to think about Tesla in terms of valuation today, playing with that kind of probability weighted, scenario, like, scenario tree based on that. And the ultimate goal, you need to get the four things right: unsupervised, robotaxi capable, scale out, and then boom, Tesla is in a league of its own. And then if they get there is no competition, basically.
I really appreciate that breakdown. One of the things that you mentioned, which I find very interesting, and before I ask you the question, Hans has been trying to get his thing to work. Can you hear me, Hans? Do you hear Pierre? You want to give us a quick mic check? A few seconds here. No, poor Hans. He sent me a text on the side. He said that he's just fighting with spaces he can't hear you on his end, Pierre. And so anytime he logs on, he logs back in. Anytime he comes back on the speaker board, he misses you out. So I guess poor Hans is going to have to be a listener today, unfortunately. We'll get a fix for next time. For those that are in the crowd, we will bring folks up the latter half of this conversation. We have Pierre for about an hour. He's been super kind with his time. Start bringing folks up into the next, I call it 15 or so minutes. And then, you know, we can add you to the discussion. It's going to add another dimension. One of the things that you mentioned about the scale. So one of the things that I get, that I've been trying to wrap my head around with this is, let's say, we know that Tesla's ultimate goal is to win from scale. Scale requires a gigantic amount of manufacturing capacity. In order to build out a lot of manufacturing capacity, you have to invest a lot of CapEx into production lines to be able to crank out cars in the millions of units per year. The timing of the launch of, let's say, this self-driving solution that is full robotaxi, what we, you know, let's call level 5, no steering wheel and pedal, the ability for that technology to be fully adopted by multiple, let's say, jurisdictions so that Tesla can justify the millions of units run rate, which I'm assuming they're trying to hit for this type of product in the long term. The timing to get that to line up with the manufacturing seems like an impossible mission. And so I would love to hear your thoughts about how you're viewing that, that variable in Tesla's long-term strategy of perhaps, you know, I don't know. I'm pretty sure you've read. I don't know. Actually, my assumption is that you've read Elon Musk's biography of by Walter Isaacson, where they had a chapter talking about, you know, Franz von Holzhausen was talking about, hey, we're concerned about going all in a robotaxi. We should come out with a compact car that leverages the same sort of chassis, but we just yank out the steering wheel pedal so that we can justify having those vehicles on the road at high volume without it necessarily being a robotaxi. Does that play into this at all? Because in my head is like, okay, those units seem like a very good type of vehicle to have in the world where you have the first stage and the second stage. And the first stage being supervised robotaxi, and then the second stage being unsupervised or supervised self-driving, unsupervised self-driving, where you could manufacture, let's say, a two-seater compact, which the rumors are that this is one of the vehicles we'll unveil tomorrow, potentially. This car or this transportation unit, I guess, would be a perfect candidate for that. And say they don't hit that last sort of holy grail for whatever reason, you're still flooding the market with millions of two-seater cars that have steering wheel and pedal, but they don't fully drive themselves as a level 5 vehicle. How does that play into your equation?
So, yeah, it's a very good question. The way I would frame it is the following. If today you're anyone on Earth and you have a model for for a robotaxi, you know how to manufacture it. You know how to design it. You have the design. You're ready to go, and you want to manufacture millions of them. It's going to take you, let's say, if you're anyone, it's going to take you 6 years. So you're going to have 1 year of planning and figuring out, and you select the sites, and you have 1 year to bring everything, then another year to build your fab, and then you ramp your fab, and then you need producing 2 million units a year. You need a couple of years, so that would be 5 years. You know that if you're Tesla, you can shrink that to maybe 3 years because you have a culture of like over execution and going very, very, very fast at Tesla that is proven and very, very, very unique. And then if you do that at Tesla today, where they already have a site, maybe they haven't broken ground or they've just broken ground in Mexico. So which means that it's probably something that could happen within 2 years. And so what's very good about it is that today, Tesla already has a very unique ability to ramp. So if the technology gets ready, if just behind the veil of ignorance, there is like the robotaxi, all the problems of robotaxi, like super unsupervised, robotaxi capable, scale out, all these three characteristics are solved in 6 months. We know that Tesla is actually capable of like ramping these cars very, very fast. And as you say, if they run this car, if they're capable of ramping production to millions within 2 years, it will probably take them longer to get like the whole, adoption and regulatory framework in place, and like just like the logistics of deploying the fleets, etc. So they are not going to be held back by production. So initially the plan was, as you described it, and I think it comes from like the back and forth between Elon and many in the team, where Elon wanted to be like ball against the wall on robotaxi, and others wanted to mitigate the risk of how long it will take to get us to robotaxi. And so the plan was, we're going very fast, we're going to fill in all our fabs very rapidly. We need like a new fab that will be doing the next gen platform, and that's going to be the robotaxi and our entry car as well. And then suddenly the growth in demand slowed, and suddenly Tesla realized they would have a hard time filling up their existing capacity or potential capacity that they have in existing manufacturing sites. And so there was a shift in strategy this winter, which was, we still need some time to fill in our existing production capacity. So what we need is not a next generation platform, but actually like a smaller Model 3, a smaller Model Y, and to continue to extend the portfolio and continue to grow and fill in our existing capacity. And so we are not in a rush to do a Model 2, but what we can do is actually accelerate the robotaxi program. And that came at a point where actually they almost went through an inflection in terms of the quality of the supervised FSD product that is on the road today. So all that makes complete sense. It's super pragmatic. There is no like big plan or whatever. It's like we need to maximize the production capacity we have in place today. So our factory in Mexico, we are not in a rush to ramp it. So it's probably, it's not really progressing very fast or anything like that. And it gives us time actually to focus on robotaxi. And it's going to be, in terms of, articulating the vision, you have two options. One is to say, hey guys, the demand for car, the ship interest rates are high. We've already have 15% of the markets where our price points are. And so we're going to be like a slow growth company for quite a while until we have like a cheaper car. In the meantime, we'll have to sell at very, very low price to keep our existing production capacity busy. It's depressing for investors, for employees, for executives. And you know that, and Elon just goes, it cannot survive. He cannot wake up and get out of his bed if that isn't a story. Okay.
He needs chaos.
And so he needs crazy vision and because that's how he wins basically. So he came up one morning in February or one afternoon. He said, guys, let's freeze that damn Model 2. It's not what we need. Let's do the robotaxi. and look at what the guys in the autonomous driving team are doing. So that's a moment. And it's energizing everybody. It's very good. It's very positive. And then the background of that is super pragmatic, that Tesla is going to continue to grow robotaxi or not. Tesla is going to be producing millions of cars on the next generation platform, eventually robotaxi or not. And putting robotaxi in front of the stage today, in the center of the stage, and make it like the primary point of focus for the team, for investors, for the public opinion, is the right thing to do, for sure.
On the topic of, making robotaxi sort of the center stage product and see the world can see what Tesla's working on, is that sort of what you expect tomorrow? Do you expect a full unveil? It's interesting if we read Elon's words specifically on what he said in the last few hours. He called this a product launch, but I know that sometimes Elon will use words and then, there's things he means behind it. And then people are like, oh, that's what it means. And he's like, no, that's what I meant. Right. So it's like, folks are maybe theorizing that, there's going to be some sort of new product that people will be able to order right away, and sort of get relatively soon. But what are your expectations for tomorrow? And yeah, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Hey, what's my expectations would be that they have a prototype. They're probably at a stage where they can have a demo. So I don't know, maybe some of us would be lucky enough to do their first like robotaxi drive or something like that. Then I think then there is a question on whether they're going to announce like a first deployment or a trial or something like that, a test fleet or like a small city somewhere who is going to have like a few hundred Tesla robotaxis with operators sitting at the driving wheel. And so what I would say for the stock is that this is what investors probably expect. So it would be a disappointment if there isn't like some sort of tangible elements about deployment. And it feels to me reasonable that Tesla is in a position tomorrow to announce something along these lines, like a test fleet being deployed somewhere. And they probably need that, to figure out, the whole thing. If Tesla is bullish about supervised and unsupervised being around the corner, they need to start working on managing a fleet and managing drop off and pickup and things like that. And the only way you can do it is by having a test fleet. So hopefully they announce that. So I'm not certain the thing that you haven't had any leak of a conversation and thing like that. So I wouldn't bet the farm on it. But like a lot of investors are saying that's what you should expect. The one thing that intrigues me a lot is, Elon and other people at Tesla have spoken here and there about like models that are not, that we haven't seen yet, models that are like ahead of the curve and that have not been deployed yet because they are still being trained and tested and things like that are much better than what we're using. So maybe, some kind of like, more disclosure on that front, and where do they stand at the bleeding edge of what they are doing, and how much better is it than what you have on the road? So Elon tweeted like not in recent days that they were at 10,000 MTBF, I think 10,000. I can't remember if it's 10,000 miles or 10,000 miles between this engagement or something like that.
And yeah, close to 10,000 miles between safety, what he calls safety critical disengagements.
Yes, exactly. And so I would say that's not my personal experience. I think when you use on a regular basis, then it becomes a question of if critical means I disengage or I die, maybe, but if critical means I disengage or I get in trouble.
I feel like that's what it means.
Maybe they'll be able to showcase a bit models that are not being deployed yet, but more advanced. I think they'll talk about, I think so. The only thing that for sure is like the prototype, I would say. It's going to be a product launch. And so typically when you have a product, a product launch, what you have is number one, you see the product, you have like, you have at least an early production model available for people to check and to watch. And then you have like, a timeline of when the product becomes available. So that's the base, basically.
Yeah. I think, I'm really curious to see if they'll show this long rumored van that they sort of poked at. I think it was Investor Day from last year. They had this sort of like box shaped figure on the wraps. It was in the Cybertruck category of like the TAM that they were trying to say, hey, here's all how transportation will shift to electric. And then they had a sort of van looking thing on the wraps. And then obviously they had this robotaxi looking thing on the wraps. So yeah, I agree with you. I think my gut tells me, I mean, I'm known to be over optimistic with everything really. So, my gut tells me they'll probably show two different products, but, I think in about 28, 30 hours, we'll know for sure. So, cool. Let's bring in the, other speakers in so they can ask some questions and throw out some comments. If that's good with you, Pierre, did you want to mention anything else? Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Perfect. Go ahead.
Let's do it. So let's bring in Deepak first, and then we'll go to Lord Pretty next. Deepak, go ahead and unmute and throw some knowledge. Yes, sir.
I have like maybe a two-part question. The first one is, well, how much will this compact or this like robotaxi car be for consumers? The other question will be, is will we be able to set a price point on what we charge for rides on the robotaxi? Like say for Uber, that you can charge, let's say, for $50 for a ride to 3 miles. Or like, is it per mileage per ride? And how will Tesla be competitive with like Uber, Waymo, and other rideshare services to be more user-friendly? Let's say if a user want to charge a $100 ride to the airport and or for like luxury services, like how would Tesla be able to thrive in that environment?
So I can't see a Deepak, unfortunately. So maybe okay.
I can give you a
quick summary. I don't know.
SpaceX sometimes is just buggy, unfortunately. That's one of our battles. So his question was basically around pricing. So how you're thinking about the pricing model, how you're going to be competitive with players like Waymo. How are we viewing the ownership model, the renting model, sort of like a little bit of detail behind how you're thinking about Deepak?
Okay. Thanks, Deepak. That's a great question. And, so the question can get, very complicated. And so what we did to simplify, the problem at that stage of development is not to get into deep and, private drivers making their cars available. So we ignore that. It simplifies a lot of the problem to do that. So, and it's like, a fairly conservative assumption, so maybe things could get better if you have like, the contribution to the network of private owners cars, which we ignore it for the moment. So when you look at the economics of the robotaxi itself, so we have like a fairly, we've done a fairly, detailed analysis of the how much it costs to run a robotaxi. And to give you an order of magnitude, we have like a cost that is in terms of cost of goods sold, so the cost for the network being operated by Tesla with their own cars. Where you would have a bit less than 20 cents per mile that would relate to just the capital cost of the car. And then you would have a bit more than 20 cents per mile that would relate to the maintenance of the car, electricity, of course, the supervision of the network, so the remote supervision of the car. And last but not least, running the ride sharing network, like the apps. And so we've done this analysis, leveraging our knowledge and understanding of the economics of Uber, of like insurance costs, like electricity costs and things like that. So we are kind of like just below 50 cents per mile for cars that are well utilized and with like very efficient supervision. So you don't need, you know, one supervisor per car, but one supervisor can manage. I think we have in our order maybe 20 or 25 cars. I don't remember exactly, et cetera, et cetera. So we are fairly comfortable with that number. Then there's the question of what's the markup Tesla takes on it. Do they take a 50% margin, a 35% margin, like an 80% margin, like Nvidia? You know, it's a good question. And so here, and I see that's, that was one of the questions of, not previous. You know, when you set prices, when you analyze, as an analyst, prices, you have two principal mechanisms that set prices in the market. The first one is competition. So everybody wants to win the business, and so everybody lowers prices. And if you stick to Marxist theory, you would have the player with the highest cost base going to zero margins. And then that would tell you what's the price in the market, and all other players will make money depending on the quality of their price, of their cost base. And so that's like, a cost base perfect competition model. Okay. So that's not what would apply to robotaxi. In robotaxi, the primary driver of your pricing is going to be elasticity, because you know that the more you lower the cost of the service, the more volume you generate. And here you're talking crazy, crazy elasticity. So the average price today you pay for like an Uber ride is $4 a mile. Okay. If you take that price down to 65 cents, we estimate it's increasing the size of the market by at least 10x and maybe 20x in volumes. Okay. So every cent you get out of your price gives you more volumes. And so what we've, the way we've set our margin, which is 35, so to have like a total cost for the user of 65 cents, is that if you get very, very close to the cost of a subway ticket, a bus ticket, or the ownership of your own car, but with a decent premium, like your own car, which is the best, you know, reference point, driving your own car costs you 50 cents a mile. If it costs you $1 a mile to use robotaxi, you're going to use your own car very often. If it costs you 50 cents a mile to use robotaxi, you're probably going to use robotaxi almost all the time, but then Tesla is barely going to make money because the margin will be single digits. And so if the robotaxi is 65 cents, which is a 30% premium on personal cars, then robotaxi is going to take a shitload of market share to personal cars, and Tesla will still be making 35% margins. Okay. So I could change my model and put a 50% margin if you want, but the model wouldn't be as good, because the price will be higher and the penetration will be lower. So of course, I don't pretend that I know exactly where it's going to land, but that's the way you need to think about the model. So I see like it, in the comments on the space that there was this question, why 35% EBIT margin? Well, that's driven by, like, you know, an early stage, first estimate, elasticity measure. Then on our cost per mile, I read a lot of research where the cost per mile is much lower. I clearly think we are right, and people who have a lower cost are wrong. And it's simply because like we cover Uber, we know very well ride sharing, and you know, the costs related to managing the network are actually quite significant. Because you know, like to run a network of robotaxi cars, you need people, you need staff, you need employees in every city. Like the cars can't run by themselves. You know, you need to think about an infrastructure that is the equivalent of an infrastructure of people renting cars, you know, just to get the cars in, the cars out, and the, managing like the relationship with the local authorities and things like that. It's, these things add up quite a lot. And I've never seen an analyst taking that into account. Then you have the cost of insurance, and you have the cost of electricity, the cost of maintenance, and then of course the cost of supervision. I think you will have a relatively significant cost of supervision. And even if you're super bullish about the technology, even if you imagine that one supervisor can supervise like a like 25 cars or even 100 cars, which is super, super. Maybe, you know, over time it will happen, but it's very, very optimistic. You can't ignore this cost. So yeah, it's like we feel very good about our cost estimate, and we think our margin estimate reflects very well, you know, the invisible hand of Adam Smith is going to get the market, assuming that basically Tesla is not going to have any competitors. I'll add one more comment on that front, which is comparing to what you see today. So today Waymo charges more like $4 or $5 a mile. So their price are very similar to Uber. Okay. But that's, and the cost for Waymo to run a car is significantly more than the robotaxi that Tesla is aiming for, of course, because the car is more expensive. But you know, let's say the car is 3 times more expensive. So instead of being like 15 cents per mile, the cost of amortizing the car is going to be 45 cents per mile. That means when Tesla is going to have a cost base of 45 cents all in, Waymo will be probably at like 60, 70 cents. So they're going to be more expensive, but in the same ballpark. So we are modeling a market where anyway, Waymo is never going to be able to scale as fast as Tesla. So they are not a meaningful competitor in terms of setting the price. So if you think, oh, Tesla is going to set the same price as Waymo, no, I think that's a mistake. Waymo doesn't really exist in that scale out market. In like, if Tesla really gets to the bottom of their ambition, Waymo doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's been one of my things that I've been trying to wrap my head around is how is the existing rideshare services, how could it possibly stay competitive with that type of solution where it's a fully self-driving platform at a fraction of the cost of what they would offer, even with the self-driving solutions that they would have. So it's like okay, yeah. how is that going to work? It's been difficult for me to get my head wrapped around
that. Well, it's actually the answer to that to me, that is very, is actually very, very straightforward. Like Tesla's robotaxi capable scale out technology, Uber virtually disappeared. Uber disappeared the way taxi drivers disappeared. So they will still be around for people who don't like, et cetera. So they're not going to go away overnight and go bankrupt, but like they're going to stop growing. They're going to probably decline. And so it's going to be a very tough place for them to be, the same way it has been very tough to be a taxi driver, you know, in the last 10 years. But it's only, that's a big if, that means like Tesla delivers fully on the vision. And I don't think it's the most likely scenario. Like in the way I've, you know, modeled my conditional probabilities, the scenario that this happens is like 10% chance. And so 90% chance, Uber has a fundamental, very important role. Because here is the situation, Farzad. If you have a car that is unsupervised self-driving and robotaxi capable, but doesn't scale out, so which means that putting this car on the road and getting them to pick up and drop off people is just a slow process. There is no way you build your own network, but you partner with Uber, and Uber deploys with you in stars, and you share the economics with Uber. And to me, this is actually the most likely scenario. And I know that Elon hates it and doesn't want to consider, you know, having another, but if like we are there in my tree of possible outcomes in terms of technology development, it's going to be a no-brainer. So let's go over the economics. The technology is not scaled out and has to be ramped within the fleets of Uber. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have an Uber that has, let's keep like super simple numbers, 1 million cars and drivers. And so they introduce 1% of their cars become Tesla robotaxi. So that's 10,000. Okay. It's already like 15 times more than what Waymo has on the road today. So it's already a good effort in terms of scaling out. These cars deliver the 45 cents a mile cost, whereas Uber actually charges $4 and makes 40 cents of profit. So the underlying fully loaded cost for Uber is $3.60.
Yeah.
And that's the cost of the car, the driver, and also like the Uber organization. So when Uber basically gets a ride delivered by a robotaxi instead of a human driver, it makes a $3.20 saving. It pays 40 cents instead of $3.60. And this $3.20, they'll have to give a chunk of that, of course, to Tesla, who provides the technology. They'll keep a chunk for themselves. But most of it, they're going to give it to the end user. And so if you have like cars that are 80% cheaper to run, and if you have 10% of your fleet that are like that, you can on average lower your cost by 20% times 80%, which is 16%. And so as Uber is ramping robotaxi technology in the mix, the lower prices, and remember that's driving up massively usage, and they split the benefits between Tesla and Uber. And so in that model, I have Uber actually making more like a 50% margin, like a 40 cents of profits per 40 cents of cost on a mile. So they charge Uber 80 cents per mile. Uber keeps also an extra 40 cents of profits on these drives, and they use the reduced price to basically lower their prices across the board. And the beauty of that model is that if tomorrow you have some intelligence that is shared between Uber and Tesla that says, we know which drives are super easy, and we know on which drives the quality that the robotaxi screws it up is almost zero, then you start allocating these drives to the robotaxi. And then as time goes, you accumulate experience and more drives are eligible to robotaxi. And maybe 20 years down the line, 70% of the rides are robotaxis. So the end game is the same.
Yeah.
But then to get there, you have to, you have to hook onto the existing ride sharing network.
You essentially bypass profits to a third party like you said, to help you sort of grow and scale your business and lean on their expertise, which kind of also slows down the ability to lower your prices as quickly as you would want to in a situation where, like, best case scenario where Tesla is just able to scale these things rapidly and leverage their own network. It's just, you're delaying the process, but we're basically landing in the same place. You're just using a friend instead of going at it alone. That's basically. Okay.
That's actually. And keep in mind that if you can scale out very rapidly, it doesn't make any sense to do it. Okay. You go by yourself and you destroy Uber. It's a much better approach. Yeah. But if it's very painful for you to scale, what Waymo and Cruise have confirmed now over the last 5 years is that something we have claimed in our research like 6 years ago is that if you can scale only very slowly, then there is no way you can compete with Uber, because Uber has the scale, the liquidity, and can offer any ride. And like, if you have like 700 cars in a city in which Uber has 7,000, how can you, like, growing from there is going to cost you way more than splitting your economics with Uber to grow the market.
No, makes perfect sense. We're coming up on an hour here, Pierre. Do you have time for one more question from
Michael?
Okay, awesome.
I'm good. Yeah, I have 10 more minutes. Sorry.
Okay, fantastic. Go for it.
Hey, thanks. I'll keep it short. I spent a couple hours looking at the report in detail. Thank you for sharing it. I wanted to ask you about price per mile. So I noticed a lot of analysts kind of jump into this this vector of 60 cents or 50 cents price per mile. And I have a big question mark here, because if you think about it logically, right, how do you reconcile with the fact that in San Francisco, where the average ride is about 2 miles long, it would cost $1.20 in your model for that ride. And this is one of the highest income cities in the world, charging $1.20 for a ride in a robotaxi. I just don't see that happening for the first 10, 15, or maybe even 20 years. So how should we think about this? Because even Elon said that. He doesn't believe that price per mile is going to come down below a dollar for the first 10 years or so. And then secondly, about the probability of success. I mean, it sounds like you're applying a 10% success rate to Elon's vision. It seems like 90% chance that it's going to fail. And it doesn't really make sense to me, because there's no world where Uber is relevant when robotaxis are live. Consumers have perfect information. They check multiple apps before requesting a ride. There's no reason why there would be any cost of acquisition to get customers on a market by market basis.
Did you hear that, Pierre?
No, nothing.
Okay. Okay, I'll let me confirm with Lord Pretty Flacco here to make sure I got framing correct, and then I'll throw it to you.
So, I can ask your summary if you want.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that, and then I'll pose him the first question of the San Francisco example, which I think I got that. The second one was the 10% success rate seems unlikely was basically the overarching theme for that second question. But if you have the summary, send it to me as well or post it on the replies. Sure. I'll bring it up as well. So the first question he asked was, if we use sort of the 40-50 cent model and you apply this to say in San Francisco, where, you know, you would travel 3, 4, 5 miles or whatever it is, you're basically charging a person $1.20 to $1.50 for one of the most common types of ride shares in that area. And that seems way too cheap for a region that is much more, it's very affluent, one of the most highest income places in the world. And so at that point, you would think supply and demand dynamics kick in and Tesla is going to be able to charge a lot more than $1.20, which means that they would make a way more margin. And he also sort of alluded to the fact that Elon may have also said, you know, he said that, hey, this is also what Elon said is like, at the beginning, we're going to start high and then perhaps we're going to go lower over time. Yeah. Curious to hear your take on that.
Yeah. So be careful to, the ride share market is difficult to analyze because there is no easy path from the micro to the macro. And so if you have prices in San Francisco of $1.50, like, whatever you had in mind, it is very easily irrelevant because the thing is that your economics are over all the rides you deliver across all your regions. And then, you know, when you say, 50 cents, sorry, like 40 or 45 cents on average, cost and then 65 cents on average pricing, it might be $1.50 in San Francisco and $3 in New York and 55 cents, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it might be, less than 50 cents, during like, outside of peak hours when basically offering a ride for the cost of electricity and the cost of amortization of the car is actually better than having the car idle, why it would still be like $3 during peak hours, because during peak hours, you don't have any car, enough cars anyway to serve the service. Okay. So this, like the pricing dynamics of ride sharing are very, very difficult to, you can't like grasp them just like that. It's either you deal with average and you stick your math to that, or you look at anecdotal prices, but you know that making the link between the two never works. So that would be my first element of answer. Then second element of answer on you start high, you finish low, etc. It's like, I don't know, you know, what I know for sure, is that today ride sharing is $4 per mile. And it's capturing like barely 1% of traveled miles. And you know that the personal car is 50 cents. Okay. So if you have the ability to get very close to the cost of traveling with your own car, your market can grow, like I say, like 10x, 20x, 30x very easily. So if you want, you can do a model where you have like 10 times less volumes and you have like 10 times more margins. But according to my math, you're going to end up with the same amount of profits in absolute dollars. Okay. So it's almost like a sterile, debate. When you get to scale, that's what the model gets to. Then the second last element I would give you as an answer to your question is remember that we are talking about a scenario where Tesla pulls out on the road cars to compete with Uber. And in order to do that, you have a critical mass. So you need like thousands of cars in every city you get to. So the fixed cost is going to be very important early on. And the priority is not to make $3 a mile because Uber charges $4. The priority is to empty Uber, say, 80% margin or 75% margin. but sitting in only a cell or half your cars. So like you can play with the numbers if you want, like Latin alert, and we're very, very confident about them. Our hand in that model, you know, the answer to these questions are not to be found like just in a quick chat. You need to have like a spreadsheet and do the model and compare the numbers. And trust me, if you do that, you'll see that if you have to roll out thousands of cars in your city, and if your option is I compete with a 25% discount to Uber and I progressively take share from Uber, you're not going to make as much money as you if you go straight for like disruptive pricing and really like jumpstart a new growth curve for demand and for the market. Yes, at the end of the day, you know, you look out of a slide like a margin number or a cent per mile number, but the underlying reality is that you have a model in which you have cars that need to be occupied and you have like the number of miles driven. And again, you know, you, in a lot of businesses, you know, you make more money with a lower price because you stimulate your demand. Did I answer all the questions for that? Or
yeah, I think you hit. I think there was a second part about, you know, 10% chance of this coming to fruition is sort of,
oh, yes.
That feels like an unlikely scenario because, you know, in the event, you know, if Tesla is actively working towards sort of the neural net approach and a high scale approach, by default, you're going to land in that being the highest chance scenario because it's too good of a product for it to not be the highest likelihood chance for that actually coming to fruition. I know I bungled up what he said, but I think that was essentially sort of his point. So
yeah,
I don't have any thoughts there.
Yeah, no, no. And I respect that perspective a lot. And the whole idea of this research is to break away from the believer, non-believer debate. Okay. So you could say, well, you know, I believe it's going to happen. And I tell you, well, you know, I don't believe it's going to happen. And this thing, as a matter of fact, is behind the veil of ignorance. So we don't know. So the only acceptable answer to the question is we don't know. You don't know and I don't know. Okay. So the question is, when you don't know, what do you do? Well, you move step by step. Okay. And hopefully, and you do your best to walk in the right direction. And to me, for that scenario to exist, you need unsupervised, robotaxi capable, and scale out capable, these three features. And the way I like to frame it is once you've split the problem into three steps like that, you can put down probabilities and you can put down the probabilities you want. And my probabilities come down as follow. I say 75% chance we get to unsupervised. And you could say, no, it's 100% or 99%. I'm like, fine. But then it becomes like a religious question. You know, it's like no debate or no experiments will prove any of us right or wrong. But I think 75%, in terms of prudence is probably like optimistic enough. Then once you know that the car can drive where it says, you have to develop a system which ensures that the car is also capable of delivering the mission, which is picking up the passenger, dropping off the passenger, and dealing with any kind of shit that can hit the fan in between. And here, my personal view is that it's really uncharted. So I put only a 50% conditional probability. And then once you are robotaxi capable, there is really that this like leap of faith, which is that your robotaxi that is robotaxi capable in the test fleet you've deployed a couple of years ago in Phoenix, Arizona. Now you can deploy it anywhere you want and boom, it's going to work. That's a leap of faith. You can say if you want, yes, it's very likely because it's a neural network, but it's like you talk like a religious person talking about their faith, and I have a lot of respect for that. I'm totally fine with that, but that's not the topic of the discussion right now. The topic of the discussion right now is how do we make investment decisions? How do we evaluate what's the right direction for Tesla is to take today? And here I put like a 25% chance. Okay, so once you have a robotaxi that can do the job, getting this robotaxi to be scale out which means you drop it anywhere and it works, 25% chance. And so 75% times 50% times 25%, that's 10%. And I'm like, and I'm not telling you, I know I'm right, you're wrong. I'm telling you that's a framework that is super powerful. Because the day I get to 99% instead of 75% on my step one, or actually to even 100%, because that's there, I'm like, oh, if my 75% went to 100%, then suddenly my 10% becomes 12.5%. And if tomorrow Waymo or Cruise or Tesla demonstrate a technology that knows how to pick up and drop off people and that knows how to deal with like an unforeseen traffic situation, and these guys prove that actually once you are capable of driving and supervised, you are also capable of delivering a robotaxi, my 50% becomes 100%, and my 12.5% becomes like 25%, et cetera, et cetera. And then the scale out, the real problem to me is scale out, is okay, you have a car that can drive by itself anywhere. Okay, you manage to put together a fleet delivering robotaxi services in Phoenix. But now, how do we move that to New York, to the suburbs of New York, to Boston, to wherever you want, to Mormons? Maybe not Mormons, but Anchorage, you know, and then you have like a different weather conditions and you have like different ways of people to move around the city differently, et cetera, et cetera. So like, it's a bit cold to say that now it's going to work, isn't it? And so I prefer to have like this framework in mind, and that is going to give me the ability to look at how things are evolving. And over time, I'd be able to increase my level of confidence or decrease my level of confidence, or, you know, change, you know, where my most likely scenario is. So if you think about it as a most likely scenario, today, the most likely scenario is actually super exciting for Tesla, is that they manage to get to unsupervised. So I think it's a good chance, like 75%. And then after that, they have a 50% chance to make it as a robotaxi. So you have a 37.5 chance that Tesla really deploys robotaxi. And if they have robotaxis that are not scale out capable, then probably the best route will be to deploy them in partnership with Uber, and the value for Tesla on that scenario is actually gigantic.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for your time, man. Really awesome discussion. Thank you to Lord Pretty Flacco and Deepak for their questions. Sorry, Hollins, that we didn't get your side working, unfortunately. But super exciting. Again, I have the latest report from PFM New Street Research pinned to the top of the comment. Make sure you go check that out. And I think Nicole up here has us tentatively scheduled for a follow-up discussion the day after Robotaxi. So if you're still good and free, I'd love to do this again to sort of recap what we've learned on the Robotaxi event and compare notes.
Absolutely.
Boy, is everything going to change tomorrow.
Absolutely. So we might have to change the time because my travel got changed a bit, but we'll definitely do that. Worst case, we'll do it on Monday or something like that.
Okay. Sounds good. Awesome. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Pierre. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the event, and I hope your flight is as painless as possible.
Thanks a lot, and see you tomorrow. Bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.